quarter after four on April 6th, and President Representative Spottles, Collins, Boucher, and Donnelly, first amendment is in his House Bill 155. We do have a proposed committee substitute for us. Chair would entertain a motion to adopt the committee substitute for purposes of discussion.
I would so move, Chair.
Okay. Is there any objection?
We're in a meeting now,
yes.
No objection.
Okay, hearing no objection, the committee substitute is now before us. It does several of the points of concern. I guess it addresses the Department of Administration's concerns. It now places the program in the under the jurisdiction of the Department of Labor. Requires that it only applies to employers who have at least 21 employees or more. Those are some of the key points in it.
I have a question, and maybe Ginger knows the answer. One of the things that we were working on in subcommittee was administration had a question about making the leave
consecutive instead of being able to take it pieces of time.
And then that created this loophole where potentially a mother and a father could not take leave for the same child because it wouldn't be at the
right.
same time.
The language has been amended to remove that problem. Roxanne,
okay.
Is that correct?
Good. So it's now possible for a mother to take 4 weeks and then a father to take the second 4 weeks without it being a problem.
Roxanne.
And it's not a problem to DOA.
Right. Roxanne, are you representing the sponsor? Go ahead and just identify yourself to the rep here.
I'm Roxanne Turner, staff to represent the
crowd. Okay. I wish Representative Lehman was here because I know he had some number changes he wanted to propose, but I think I'd really like to move the bill. I don't know if everybody else is happy with it, then I don't think it would make,
Well, it's going to go from here to Hess.
Is that not correct?
Correct. Come on, here. He was at our subcommittee hearing.
And I did talk to him, tell him it was going to be up at 4 o'clock on the floor just now. So, well, does anybody have any further discussion, proposed amendments, motions?
I'd like to move committee substitute for House Bill 155 onto the next committee of referral with individual recommendation.
Okay. Motion is to move the committee substitute for House Bill 155 and individual recommendations. Any objection? Hearing no objection. Motion carries.
Do you want to get to the safety bill?
Yeah.
Huh?
But he said he's going to be here
too. Bear, get somebody else in car and get him after we make sure it's protected.
Thank
you. I feel pretty good. We've moved a lot from
where State Affairs, you guys have been busy, yeah.
We're down to what I call the Martin calendar.
The Martin calendar.
Two-thirds of the bill left in there is sponsored by Terry.
Oh.
That's right. So I'm just going to hold a Terry Martin week where he can come up there and talk about everything. Bring his piles of
documentation.
Well, I wish I had an answer for this APC dilemma for you.
Which one's that?
Well, I was just mentioning to the committee that Kirtula canceled budget audit meeting again last week, so we still don't have a budget. Let's take a recess. Lauren? We didn't know whether you want to make specific amendments on 155. I mean, I'm willing to go back and let you take any chance. It seemed like the committee was pretty happy with the committee substitute the way it was. If you want to go back and do it for the record or something, I'd certainly entertain that.
I'd like to do it for more than the record.
Okay.
All right. Mr. Chairman.
Okay, because I was kind of stalling, hoping you'd be here. Okay, we're going to go back on record, we're back, and Representative Lehman, why don't you, Chair would entertain a motion that we rescind our action in moving the bill from committee to consider any specific amendments you want to propose, and then that would be the same as voting amendments up and down anyhow, and I'll give you all the time you want to discuss the amendments.
Okay.
Okay.
Right.
I'll try this quickly.
Because he's 17 minutes late.
I'll read it, and I do have written. I don't have several copies. Mr. Chairman, the First Amendment is to insert under findings, finding number one, with rare exception, parents are the best providers of care for their own children. And then just renumber the other sections accordingly.
Gotta make it this tough
quote again. No, I do, that's the only one I have that way. Then the other one I can talk about.
Okay, where did you put this in now?
Oh, I put it in number one and renumbered. One through four would then become two through five.
And could you read that again?
With rare exception, parents are the best. What is it? What is it? Best providers for their own children, or best source of providing for their own children?
Well, the motion is to rescind our action to consider a specific amendment, and that's the amendment. We can save time. Is there? Any objection to the motion to rescind our action? Yes. And do you know where we're at here?
Yes, yes, I am.
Okay, you object. Okay. So I'm going to allow discussion on it at this point. I'm really interested in seeing what you guys think about this one.
Well, I think the intent of this legislation is to allow parents to stay home with their infants. That's one of the intents of this legislation. However, I think that this as a finding is probably a little bit broad to that purpose and doesn't really serve this bill. I could possibly agree to some language that said in the early, we're talking about 8 weeks, whatever it is, weeks of life, nurturing, bonding, being important to the child. I mean, that's a finding that I could support. I think this finding is overly broad. It's not necessarily going to be helpful to the intent of the legislation.
How would you feel about it if it said, generally, parents are the best providers of care for their own children?
I don't have a problem with that.
I mean, that seems to go to the purpose of the bill, because we'd like to allow the parents to stay home with their
I thought that the amendment was written, Mr. Chairman. I thought it was consistent with the testimony offered earlier. We've had people in here testifying about pro-family legislation, about this being pro-family, and I just wanted to put our committee's concurrence that, you know, that this is certainly a pro-family provision that I'd like to see attached.
I would disagree with Representative Sponholz because I think that really if we're trying to make a case for having parents stay home with their children, I think that this is certainly consistent with that. And it would seem to me that that's what the bill is trying to say, that we think parents ought to stay with their kids, not only when they're newborns and we're going through that whole bonding thing, but also if they get sick, really sick, and need their parent at home. And I would just say that I disagree with it because this is consistent with what the bill is attempting.
I guess I just ask how this is real different from number two. It is important to the development of a child into the family unit that parents be able to participate in early child rearing and the care of a child with a serious health condition. I think this more accurately describes what we're trying to get at, and it's the same thing, while not being as broad. Because we are talking about, in fact, parents who work, and this bill is about parents who work, not parents who don't work.
But that just because the parents are working doesn't mean that statement is incorrect.
No. I don't mean that it does. I just mean that it doesn't. As broadening the statement from what we have in number two here into this broader piece in this amendment doesn't necessarily serve the purpose of this bill, which is to assist families who work with maintaining their families while they work.
And the reason for that is because, with rare exception, parents are the best providers of care for their own children, which is why should we make an exclusion, an exception for parents and allow them to go off work and go to all this effort if, in fact, anybody can take care of the kids? And I guess I think it is germane, and I think that he makes a good point.
But Mrs. Inman.
Mr. Chairman, I think that it wouldn't be inappropriate to have a, if this is indeed a broad statement, which I think it is in this context, broad, and then go to this, to more narrow, more specific, and I think it sort of sets the tone for the other findings that follow.
I think the tone may be the key here. I don't. The language, with rare exception, might be taken as an offense by, you know, foster parents and things like that. And I think there's a lot of foster parents out there. And if we made it generally, I wouldn't have any problem at all with it. I think that's true generally. Parents are the best providers for care of their own children. But there are some people that really do a good function for all of society by stepping in because the state asked them to take care of children. And I just don't want to offend them.
Mr. Chairman, my intent's not to belittle at all the care by those who are foster parents or adopt or, for that matter, are grandparents taking care of grandchildren or anything like that. It was more of a statement that it's, we acknowledge that, you know, that a family unit, well, I think it's that.
Oh, I agree with you. Yeah.
I just want to make another a little distinction, and it looks clear that the tide is with this amendment. But the I think that to be a good parent is not necessarily to provide care. That I may be a good parent, and someone else may be a better person to be with my two-year-old day in and day out. I mean, I think that I can be a good parent by choosing good providers of care for my children. I think that's another way of parenting that exists in the 80s, that didn't exist in a previous century. I'm concerned about this language, because it would seem to imply that the intent of people working is contrary to good parenting. And I don't think that that's necessarily true. I think there are many ways to parent. Some ways to parent include staying home with your children. Some ways to parent do not include staying home with your children. And many of those may be good ways.
Yes, I would disagree with that, because what this bill is saying, that it is really so important that a parent do parent his child at appropriate at these particular times, that we ought to make employers give them the time off. So, you know, I think your argument is the intent of the bill. Because to me, that's what the bill says.
Okay, well, Representative Lehman, would I just make a suggestion? I'd like to see it. Instead of, with rare exception, we say generally, parents are the best providers of care for their own children. Because, I mean, do you have a problem with that? Representative Boucher, you haven't spoken yet. Like,
no, I'm listening. I think it makes good sense. But I support what Representative Wayman's trying to accomplish here. I think the word generally is your point's well taken.
Well, I guess what I'd like to do then is to, this is kind of convoluted, but if we could amend the motion to return, the reason for the motion to return, to say that the proposal would be generally parents are the best providers of care for their own children, I entertain a motion to do that. Representative Spahn, did you?
I would just like to object to that.
Okay. Nobody's going to move that.
I did. I said I
need. Oh, okay. Is there any? And so, Representative Spahnholz, you objected to that. Okay. Is there further discussion? All those in favor of the amendment? One. Okay. The amendment passes. Now, the motion before us is to return. Rescind our action for purposes of considering a specific amendment. That amendment is before you as amended. Generally, parents are the best providers of care for their own children. Just on further discussion, I think the way I read this, and I think that it does fall within the purpose of the bill, is I don't think it's saying that there aren't times when I think generally parents are the best providers of care. I think that addresses their responsibility to provide care, and that care may be in the form of making sure somebody else you trust is there to take care of your children, that they're being taken care of that way. That's the way I'm reading this. I know I'm not trying to read thoughts in other people's minds, but just for myself personally, I don't read that as saying that because somebody had somebody, you know, entrusted their grandmother to take care of their child while they were working or something, is certainly doing anything wrong. That may be the best way to provide for that.
I think that within this is an implied suggestion that parents who do not provide the care for their own children are not good parents, and that's why I'm objecting to this, and we'll vote against the amendment.
I would just say that I would agree with the chairman in that the term provided, and it is general, it's not specific, because you can provide hands-on care to your child, or you can provide a particular type of care to your child. It really is very, very general. And I would say that if this said, if this statement said, with generally parents are the best providers of care for their own children in their own home, then I think he would be addressing your concerns. But this is very general, and parents provide different levels of care. And I think because it's so general, I don't see that there should be a concern with it.
Okay. All in favor of those who are returning to consider the specific amendment, indicate. All those opposed? Okay. Motion carries. So the specific amendment is before us. Further discussion? I, not being a parent, I probably lack a lot of the sensitivity of those of you that are parents have on the subject, so I'm kind of in a quandary here. I want to try to empathize with your personal feelings because you have a better perspective on this, obviously, than I do.
So, as a God, here it goes on my kids again.
Let's start with the last one.
That would have to be a true statement in society if we, let's say by the year 2000, we say occasionally parents are the best providers of care. You know, we've gone from with rare exception to generally to occasionally. And, you know, we could be headed to, I don't know. But most of my mistakes, and I have made, Lord knows my share of, and it led to problems, to pregnancy, to drugs, and everything. But the minute that I brought my love back into it as their flesh and blood, and there were a lot of good people that helped along the way. But I guess what I look at this and see is parents should be the best providers of care for their children. Is their children, and certainly I've watched you, and I could just take the S off of that and say parent are the best providers, because I think the statement following that, the legislature finds that the number of single parent and they're growing at an alarming rate. You know, and I would say that people like yourself, you just look at your son and you can see the love there, so it doesn't take both of you. But it sure takes one of you, and of all of the people that take care of your son, I'd say there's no doubt, but just looking in their eyes, who is the best for them? And I guess that's what we're saying here, at least I think that's what we're going to say. And that's how I feel it, that doesn't, I don't think that it has an effect that you're good to know that you're be a bad parent if somebody else takes care of you, what have you. I can feel that out of it, but then, you know, you might have one.
Thank you. It occurred to me that the language that jumps out at me and that I'm reading differently may have to do with my professional orientation, so I'm going to try to describe that. Providers of care in terms of foster care, social services, child care licensing means something very specific. Providers of care, provider is someone who does it instead of. Generally speaking, they do it for money. Sometimes they do it as a volunteer. Providers of care is actually the person who is in the trenches and it has that specific connotation. It doesn't mean nurturing in a general sense. In terms of the way I have parented, it's been my choice in working full-time for 8 years to find other providers of care while I continue to parent and nurture my children. Okay? So that's a distinction that I draw, and partly that probably comes from my professional orientation. I think many people will read that the same way I do, that is the people who are oriented to it in that way. And many of our statutes are written in that way. I'm not sure, this will be in labor.
Well, we have a motion before us, a motion to amend the bill. If you had a suggestion on a different phrase or something, it would be appropriate to move to amend.
Well, I like the language we have in number two, because this is about the birth of children. I find this overly broad, and I think that it implies that working parents are not the best parents. And I think that's a very bad implication and doesn't belong in this legislation, which is designed to support the reality of families in the 80s. That is, parents do work.
I guess I don't see what that amendment says. I mean, I don't, because it is broad. It's a broad amendment, and I just don't draw that distinction in reading that language. I think you're reading more into it than it's actually there.
There's no proposals for alternative language, and we just have a proposal before us.
Move the amendment.
Okay. I'll take that as a call for a vote. All those in favor of the amendment signify, usual sign. All those opposed, amendment carries.
Okay, so we... Did you have another amendment?
I do, Mr. Chairman. On the page 2, at the top, the paragraph that starts with the B in parentheses, I propose an amendment that deletes that paragraph. I'd like to address why. What that would do is allow negotiation agreements that would preempt the next section, section 1880-225, and in doing that, that would allow employees to reach agreement if they chose with their employers, so it would be of their choice, or they could reach an agreement not to be covered under this. And my concern is that if we have mandatory leave, then the choice of an employer is, if they don't provide it, is not to hire. And I think we're really going to harm by not having this be a voluntary system. We're actually going to hurt some people who otherwise could be employed. I'm concerned about that. I expressed my concern on this bill when it was first introduced in this committee, and I still maintain that concern. We want to have the ability to have people work, and when they come and look for work, if this is a requirement, especially in the company, I think they limit now to 21, there could be a tendency for that person not to be hired. I think if we have this in here this way, it would, if they didn't reach agreement, then the other conditions would still hold. If they reached agreement with the employee, then conditions would not.
Okay. So I'm going to take that as we have a motion before us to rescind our action once again and adopting the bill for purposes of considering a specific amendment.
My interpretation of B is that, and it's too bad Representative Brown is not here, that it says that an employee or a union could negotiate a better deal but not a worse deal than what we're already doing. And if we were to remove that section, then it takes a gaping hole out of the protections this bill is designed to provide.
Is the sponsor's representative on it? Address that proposal at all.
Mr. Chairman, I agree with Representative Sponholz. It provides for comparable benefits. It would require comparable benefits.
Mm-hmm.
That's
Representative Lehman?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I recognize that, but my point is that it would allow the negotiations so you don't have those same comparable, the same benefits. You could choose something else. You see, somebody may not want to have that particular benefit. They may choose something else. And I've been a participant in a cafeteria plan benefit program where I can choose. I may say, well, I have good teeth, so I don't need this particular dental program, or I don't have, and I don't expect that I will have children, and so I don't need the particular child benefit package, but I may choose to have eyesight coverage and something else. So this gives a little bit more flexibility. Instead of a mandated coverage, it leaves that option. And there again, if they don't reach the REACH agreement, then it reverts to where that's provided.
Representative Collins?
I have a question. Is it your opinion that by leaving this section in and passing the bill with the section in, that it would remove the opportunity for an employer to have a Beneflex program? And I think that's what he's driving at, is that there are, and I think they're called Beneflex programs, and they're programs that the employer buys into, and you have just kind of the whole range of things available, then you pick whatever you want. My husband has a program like that, and he can pick child care, he can pick whatever he wants, and like there's about like 50 options. It's a really nice program, and that's nice to have. I mean, we were able to pick and choose the things that were most appropriate to us. We don't have any children at home, so we didn't choose the child care option. We chose some other things. And I guess what he's driving at is, would this prevent those kinds of programs from being in place? And what he's talking about is giving the employee a choice, I think, if I understand you correctly, is giving the employee a choice to decide, this isn't a benefit that I want because I would rather have this one.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, Representative Collins, I would need the drafters.
I think a lot of people would be unhappy with that, is the reason I said it, because those are really nice programs to have, and I think they're becoming more and more available to people.
I just have a question for you. 14.20.550, is that the collective bargaining statute? That is being, notwithstanding any provision of 14.25.50 through 6.10.
Look at the answer. Negotiations and mediation. With the exception of school negotiations, negotiations are subject to 2310. Can you shed any light on this, please?
I don't have that reference.
Okay.
2310.
Thank you. I would really like to, whatever this is, I would prefer not to delete this and would support not going back. I think that the majority of union contracts at this point probably have better benefits than this. It really, nothing would be served by eliminating this. And if we're going to mandate it across the board, I think that it should include union employees as well. If we say that it is good public policy to allow families, parents to spend time with their children, then it's good public policy for everyone, whether or not they belong to a collective bargaining group or whether they don't. And I also believe that they probably, generally speaking, have higher standards than this already after talking to Representative Brown, majority of the contract. So I'd like not to go back. And okay.
Right, we need to take a vote on this. Okay, so...
Will you allow me a little
sure.
Little add to it? I'm going to vote not to go back simply because it's just a part of what's happening today, and I want to make sure I'm going to vote against it because I don't have enough knowledge in it, and I want to make sure. And I start reading this ASDIP.DAT. I strongly, as I indicated, the First Amendment there, but now we begin to get into areas. So I will not be voting against going back.
Well, I think it's important that we identify which statute it's addressing. And I...
Well, we think we have an idea for that. That it deals with the statutes that deal with collective bargaining.
The beginning of the sentence, notwithstanding any provision of AS 1425.502, that is a section of collective bargaining that deals specifically with teacher-school district negotiations. Okay, I'm looking up 1880.225, and it starts at the end of line 2 and the beginning of line 3.
Well, it tears a lot of latitude on the motion to rescind. I want to go ahead and have a vote on it at this time. We should rescind our action. Okay. So, those in favor of rescinding our action for return for a specific amendment, indicate by the usual sign. Those opposed? Okay, so motion passed. Ms. Bonner, you have to take off, don't you?
Yes, I do. Will we pass again?
Yeah, okay, well, no, that's...
We don't have to.
We don't have to.
You don't have to move this out of committee?
We already did.
We already did move it out of committee.
The motion was to rescind our action for the purpose of a specific amendment.
Well, it's out of committee out there.
Yeah.
You're sure you're in good ground?
Yeah, I think we're okay.
All right, you're in the turn.
Yeah. Well, we've, in all that delay and reconsideration, we still didn't get Representative Gruenberg with us for his safety bill. But does Department of Labor want to address us on the bill? You want to talk to us about it?
Sure.
This elevator, or no. Safety equipment, containers, House Bill 235.
And we're sorry that Representative Gruenberg, for the record, my name is Mark Hanley, legislative assistant for Representative Gruenberg. And Representative Gruenberg wanted to be here for this meeting, but he's defending another one of his bills over in Community and Regional Affairs. Originally the origin of this bill is an incident, I guess, last year that occurred in Representative Hoffman's district about a child getting trapped in a refrigerator. And out of that, Representative Hoffman and Representative Gruenberg reviewed the existing refrigerator safety laws, and they're contained in your packet under 1860-400. And they realized that they needed some update. And basically, the bill that's before the committee is a result of that update. We also have in your packet, you should have a blank CS that incorporates some of the changes that were recommended to us after the introduction of the bill by the Department of Labor and the Department of Law, and I'll be happy to go through the changes in the CS. But basically, the intent of the bill is to update the language, deal with some problems with the administration of the bill by the Department of Labor, and to expand the coverage of the bill to include the entrapment of children, and as well as the suffocation, and also to broaden the scope of it to include the maintenance of dangerous containers and refrigerators, not just their disposal. And we also, on page 2 of the bill, the original Refrigerator Safety Act was put into statute before the adoption of the Administrative Procedures Act, so we amended the review process to conform to the Administrative Procedures Act, and we raised the penalty. Well, we raised the penalty and put it into the classification because, of course, the penalty section was also before the update of our statute where we made different classifications of crime.
Mark, why would you want to make this a misdemeanor? I mean, somebody is in, you know, if somebody remodels their kitchen and they take their old refrigerator, which they don't, you know, it's very easy if you get trapped in, I guess, but you don't have knobs on the inside of most refrigerators, and they just set it out in their backyard for a day, whether
they don't have any idea they're committing a crime, I'm sure. I mean, is it, when you talk about intent here, you cite the part in the criminal court, does that mean they're better? What's the appropriate mental state?
Yeah, that's something that was that we also added at the request, sort of a standing request of the Department of Law. In the existing statute, there really isn't any mens rea requirement or intent state of mind requirement. And what we did is we put in the state of mind requirement that's in Title 11 for when you leave it blank. And it basically means knowingly with regard to actions and recklessly with regard to a result. That's what that mental state is. So actually, it could read the original language as creating a strict liability, and we cleaned it up a little bit by requiring a mental state, which is knowingly, and with regards to an action, say disposing of a refrigerator, and recklessly with regards to some sort of a result, for instance, allowing. On the last section, allowing a violation that you were reckless in your supervision of your employees or something like that, whether or not you knew.
Well, the thing I'm picking on this, is that it seems like it's not going to make any difference to the average person whether this is a misdemeanor or a violation, because they're not going to know about this law, basically. And if, you know, the real deterrent will be through punitive damages or something if somebody grossly negligently leaves this out, like in a vacant lot where kids always play. I mean, that's an obvious, and you're asking for punitives then because you did something really stupid, you'd think, you know, if you just dumped it there. And but, I mean, it's a violation even if nothing happens, as it is now. I mean, nobody gets hurt. If you just leave it there for a day, you've committed a misdemeanor. And that's just a little scary. I don't know.
I think it was Representative the sponsor's intent that he felt that this was a pretty dangerous situation, and we're not talking about we're talking a lot of cases. We might be talking about someone that has a junkyard or someone that's maintaining a dump and an area where children can play, and that he felt that a fine wasn't just sufficient enough for the hazard that this creates. I had some backup that was provided to me by the Department of Labor, and they mentioned that this is that there have been 96 recorded children's deaths since 1973, since they started keeping track of from entrapment in old refrigerators. And I think that's part of what Max's feeling was, that this is sort of a refrigerators and containers that a child can crawl into and become entrapped. They're basically like leaving a bear trap. They're basically sort of tantamount to reckless endangerment.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a bad situation too. I'm wondering though, I can see like a heavy penalty for somebody who's running a junkyard, or somebody who's got like multiple refrigerators, and they do this, and the first time you catch them, it's a violation, you write them a ticket, and if they do it again, well, then it's a crime. That would make sense to me, but to make it a crime for just, it seems to me as soon as you drag that thing out, you're out of the door of your kitchen, you just committed a misdemeanor. As soon as you turn around and walk back inside, it's sitting outside for 5 minutes, you're a criminal. And that's the thing that worries me. If it was just a violation for your first offense, right? And the other thing that worries me about this is who's going to prosecute this if nobody got injured? The only time they're going to ever prosecute this is if they actually, if there was some injury or something, because I just don't see the prosecutors going out and filing and these charges against people. Where, if it was a violation, a trooper could write them a ticket for it, say, hey, you got this refrigerator in your backyard, buddy, and that's a violation, and here's a $100 fine for you, right? Bang-o. And people would get the message then, and they wouldn't be doing it. And I don't know, I'm just throwing out some thoughts here, what I think might work.
What do you want to do with this, Mr. Chairman?
I don't know. I wish the sponsor was here. I Representative Collins.
Yeah. I have a question. What percentage of refrigerators have an indoor switch that you can unlock?
Well, presently, all refrigerators are required under present federal law. All refrigerators are now the department can correct me if I'm wrong, are required to be able to be pushed open from the outside. They're magnetic. They're not. Nobody's allowed to sell in the United States the kind, the old kind that you could get trapped in from the outside. There might be a few of those in existence, and there might be some old ones that people are using for smokehouses and that sort of thing.
Maybe the easier thing to do would be to outlaw any of those kind of things, as long as we have a federal law that says all the refrigerators have to be manufactured so they can be pushed open. Maybe what we ought to do is outlaw those types of refrigerators in the state, and I think that would solve the problem.
Uh-huh. And in fact, in this section 2, we do talk about that you can't sell those kind of refrigerators anymore. To sort of...
Well, what I'd like to do is talk to Max about this and see what his thoughts are. And I could go along with the misdemeanor if it's an escalating penalty. Somebody to get caught for the second time with one of these dangerous refrigerators, I think that justifies it. But the first time, I kind of like to see it a violation, so that the troopers could write him a ticket or fine him. Anyway, it seems like that would get him to get rid of that thing real fast. That might be a better way. But I'd like to hear what the sponsor has to say about it.
Okay. Yeah, I can.
Representative Collins?
I support the intent of the legislation because I know that has been a hazard. I guess the concern that I have is would this require, and I think when most of these deaths have occurred have been in the rural areas, and you are right, some of those people use those old refrigerators for smokehouses and things. Would this require that they change those so that they not have a lock, or how would it impact the people who are still out there using these old things for smokehouses?
What we did is in the second session we said that you can't maintain such a container for a refrigerator, and if it's in an area that's accessible to a child, unless you ensure that it doesn't prevent an unreasonable hazard. So there's ways you could either make it not an unreasonable hazard by taking that self-locking device off, or you could, if it was in an area that was a locked barn or somewhere that it wasn't accessible to children, then you'd be covered. But it would be a question of whether or not you'd make sure it was not an unreasonable hazard.
I got one more question. What do you think about the use of the word container in the first section? A container of a kind and size sufficient. I mean, it seems, or other equipment. Do you have a feeling for what that means?
We did review other state statutes, and there are a number of different approaches. Some say containers of a specific size, as far as, you know, cubic feet. And I think President Grunberg wanted to leave it a little bit ambiguous, so that it would be, you know, the burden would be on the individual to say, is this a hazardous to a child, regardless of what size it was.
You know, classic containers, a container box on a big container box.
Uh-huh.
And even if it had, I mean, this seems to indicate that this is the entrapment or suffocation of the child. So even if it was like a well-ventilated container box, if a child got in there and got...
on their own, and it could slam shut and not be able to open it again.
Yeah.
If I could just make a comment, I'm not sure you could prosecute somebody under that definition of what is a container, because it's not defined clearly enough, and I think it would violate people's due process rights because they said it's not clearly defined.
Too vague.
It would be way too vague. I think you'd have problems prosecuting. What is the size of a container that could fit a child of under the age of 11? I mean, I think it's way too vague.
You have problems prosecuting?
Yeah. Well, what I want to do is, now we're familiar with the issue and I want to talk to the sponsor about it, and I know he's busy in another committee and we really need him here to kind of talk.
And I know he's grateful that you heard it so quickly.
Sure, and so we'll carry it over.
Thank you.
Until next week. Thanks, Mom.
Okay,
we'll I need to appoint a subcommittee on...
115.
Representative Ulmer's liability of volunteers. So I'd like to appoint Representative Grunberg to chair that. Mark, are you still there? Yeah, Max said he was interested in that bill. And is anybody else interested in that?
What's
liability of volunteers? Representative Collins?
Civil liability of volunteers.
Okay. And I guess myself. So that's three of us.
We didn't already have that bill? Or is it a similar bill?
We heard it and we did not pass it out.
Max had some concerns.
so I'd like to kind of get the ball rolling on that bill. And I've got it on the calendar again for next Thursday, see if we can come up with some solutions. With that, we'll go ahead and adjourn.